a Saturday of overtimes. UNLV basketball falls yet again in overtime at Cincinnati. UNLV football, however, keeps the Fremont Cannon Red, beats rival UNR in overtime. We're going to talk about all of it today here on the Rebel Room. I'm Case Kiefer, joined by Mike Grimala. Mike, I know you were probably devastated to miss out on the Reno snow, but you were in Cincinnati at the basketball game. I'm sure you got to keep an eye on both. Pretty crazy Saturday, huh?
Yeah, I had the game pulled up on my monitor while I was getting ready for the basketball game to start. And yeah, that was quite a finish. That was just the gate on the field with Reno coming back and then going into overtime and then the walk-off touchdown. And then, you know, all the after the game stuff with the fighting and, you know, the fans, you know, ripping helmets off of the players, which I've never seen before. Like, I've seen fights before. You know, we've all seen sports fights and we've seen players get as bad as you feel for Kenyon Oblad. We've seen guys get sucker punched and we've seen guys get punched in the face and we've seen brawls. But I don't think I've ever seen a fan reach down onto the field and rip off a player's helmet before. So that was something new.
Yeah. Who was that? Could you tell whose helmet got taken off?
I think you could tell, but I've forgotten.
Okay, yeah. I was interested to get your take since you had it on the screen in what that looked like in the moment. Because I can say from being there and in the press box, like, I feel like all the highlights of the fight or the brawl, whatever, I kind of missed. It felt like, you know, watching from afar, it seemed like that usual thing where the two rivals kind of push and shove. And you could tell it got a little bit ugly. But then, you know, the teams are breaking apart. You could see that the UNR fans were instigating it even beyond it, throwing things. But I didn't see the helmet get pulled off. I did not see that kind of what sparked it all was the Kenyon Oblad getting blindsided by Austin Arnold with a punch, a hit, whatever. I thought what started it all was just UNLV streaking down the sideline. But, you know, when you're there, you miss all that. So I was wondering, you know, what came across on TV.
Yeah, no, it's hard because for football, especially because there's so many players, like when you get into those big brawls, you don't know where to look. That's what I find myself some with those bigger baseball fights too, when people charge the mound and like the entire benches and dugouts and bullpens empty. You usually end up with like three or four pockets of action and you don't really know where to look and you miss it all. So like the TV angles, yeah, from what I could tell, Steve Jenkins caught the winning touchdown, ran down the UNR sideline. But I don't think that really did anything. Like the Reno players just kind of watched him and then he ran off into the locker room. The fight started when the defensive back for UNR, number 28, Oblad walked past him and Oblad took his helmet off and the player saw an opportunity and he jumped in there and he just knocked Oblad down with a punch. UNLV players saw that, ran over, knocked down the UNR player who threw the punch. And then you're just on from there because no one sees the initial shot or the second shot. They just see like players on the ground and then the entire bench is just, you know, rushed down there to jump in. And that's when it splits off. So I didn't see anything like that. Like, it's hard to tell what's going on live. What clued me in afterwards is you see like the videos coming out like that or shot on the field by different sources and stuff like that.
I think it's important to say, I'm assuming it's the same on the Reno side, but especially the UNLV side, by all accounts, no one was injured. Everyone was fine. The players really didn't want to talk about it much after the game. Tony Sanchez, outgoing coach, said it was unfortunate, but that it's not his job to talk to the team anymore about it, and I'm sure the next guy will do it, which I thought was kind of a funny quote.
Yeah, I mean, it is funny because, I mean, most of it turned out, you know, it's football players, you know, punching each other in the helmet, which is not a big deal. The two, from what I can tell, in the reporting and the videos that have come out afterwards, there were two things that are probably going to warrant discipline. One is that number 28 for UNR just cold cocking Kenyon Oblad with a fist, like after Oblad takes his helmet off and he's not looking. Can't imagine that kid's playing again this year, maybe not ever again. I mean, if you remember, LeGarrette Blount did something similar and he was basically blackballed. So I don't know, that kid's probably got a rocky future ahead of him discipline wise. And then there was a report that a UNLV player, Giovanni Faolo, took off his helmet and swung it at fans or spectators in the stands, which, I mean, you understand he's agitated, they're throwing things, but that's a line you can't cross. We've seen heavy, heavy discipline in the pros for taking off a helmet and using it as a weapon. He's probably the next coach. Is the Mountain West is investigating, and they've got way more video angles than we've seen at home. So they'll hand down some initial discipline, but the next coach is probably going to have to decide what to do with Faolo if it turns out he indeed did do that, which has not been confirmed yet. But if he did it, there's going to be a lot of discipline coming down for that.
Yeah, some people online, of course, mainly where that's coming from, saying that he was swinging his helmet at them. I didn't see that. Like I said, I missed basically all the highlights of the brawl, though. So, and it didn't seem like any of the camera angles that are public saw that. But UNLV and UNR released a joint statement afterwards, you know, just showing they're united and that this was not acceptable. And this is something that they're going to try to eliminate from the rivalry going forward.
Do you think they really want to eliminate it, though?
Like, yeah, which is, yeah. Want it? And good luck, too, yeah. Because I don't know. I think there's always going to be this level of hostility there.
And just anything, basically, to get fans interested. From the UNLV side, I can speak to from experience in covering them. Anything that gets fans interested in this team, they're going to welcome. So you put out that statement, we don't condone this, it's bad. But, you know, next time you guys play, remember this and show up at the stadium, I think is what's less unsaid in that statement.
And that's probably true with UNR too, because I got to say, I know that people really care about this rivalry and, you know, everyone is invested who wins, but the attendance was just not good at all. And this is a team that's going to a bowl game playing their arch rival, so I think Reno could use some help from that standpoint as well.
Yeah, on both sides. Was there snowing for the game? I saw like some of the pictures you were putting up.
I don't think it was snowing during the game, but later on in the day.
There was snow around. It was very cold.
But I also overheard someone saying that this was the best crowd they had out of the last three home games, which just makes me think, wow, that's hard for me to believe. I don't know. Tough times for both programs in that regard. But at the end of the day, the Rebels keep the cannon for a third time in 5 years under Tony Sanchez, which if he has any legacy as far as on the field, I think it's got to be that he was able to beat UNR three different times.
Yeah, that's off the field. It's that the building the Fertitta Football Complex was his big accomplishment. On the field, it's definitely beating Reno 3 out of 5 times. To that's for UNLV team. For a UNLV team that is pretty much not in bowl contention, like that is your most important game of the season against your in-state rival. And to win that more than you lose it, and to go out above 500 against them and to win it twice on the road, that's good. No one can take that away from Tony Sanchez. He did a good job, and they were all close games and they were all very exciting, so he's got that going for him. I think does that affect his legacy a little bit? Do you think he'll be like, fast forward 10-15 years from now, is he remembered fondly by UNLV fans?
God, that's so hard to say. I mean, a lot of it depends on maybe fairly or unfairly just how the next 10 to 15 years play out. I mean, if they're in the same spot they are now as one of the worst FBS programs, maybe make one or two bowls, I just think there's going to be I think he'll be basically forgotten. But if this is a springboard and they have some success under the next coach, I think people will remember him for getting the Fertitta built, for getting the steps in place for them to move into the Raider Stadium and kind of being what's going to be a new era. But it's so hard to say right now. I do say it puts him out with a little more positivity. I mean, you saw a lot of people speaking highly of him after he's able to beat Reno for a third straight year. So in the immediate, it definitely helps his how his time at UNLV is viewed.
Yeah, and it sets the bar a little higher for the guy who follows him, which I'm sure he's not. I'm sure Sanchez is not too worried about that. Like, he's won it twice in a row. Now if the next guy screws it up, you know, that's looks a little better for Coach Sanchez. So.
Right, and then quickly before we move on to basketball, I know we haven't heard much about the quote-unquote next guy. But what do you think the timetable with that is? How do you see these next few weeks playing out, knowing that we do have a coaching hire to be made, and this is going to be the most important decision of the program for the next several years?
The timeline is – I know that the early signing period is coming up in December, but Desiree Refrancois, she told me, like, she's not so concerned about the timing and getting someone in before the signing period. If you look at the basketball search, it took about 2 weeks for them to get TJ Otzelberger in here. Football is a little bit different, but also you've got coaches who are waiting to play bowl games, but that's never really been an impediment in college football. You know, if you want someone who's coaching another team right now or part of another staff, you see it all the time every year. You hire them. They can either stay through the bowl game or they can leave right away and someone else gets elevated to take their place for the bowl game. So it's not when people say like, oh, they may be going after someone that's still coaching or the team's still playing. That's really not a factor. I think probably 2 weeks you'll have someone in here or someone in place. Like that's what I expected to be.
Yeah, that makes sense. So stay tuned. We'll have all the updates, LasVegasSun.com. It's just hard to say where it's going right now. I mean, I had a ton of people. I haven't even been around the football team hardly at all this year till this week, and I had a ton of people asking me, you know, what I'm hearing, who I think is going to be the next coaches. And really, it's just kind of a reckless speculation at this point. We don't really have anything to go off of. So it will be fun to monitor, and we'll see who the next guy is. But stay tuned. Nothing we can really say today. Which I guess brings us to basketball. I mentioned it at the top, but another overtime loss to take away what could have been a big win for TJ Otzelberger early in his career. And I have to confess, I have not seen much of the Rebels at all this year, but just from what I gather, it seems like this team has just been extremely unlucky. It seems like every close game falls against them. They're 3-6, but I got to think they're... I guess the actual product on the court has been a little bit better than 3-6 from my purview.
Well, it depends where you're coming from. If you want to see like exciting basketball and like the open up tempo sort of ball that TJ Otzelberger was supposed to bring, you're not really seeing that. The talent level isn't there to play that type of style. I thought it might be in the offseason. I thought they might have enough pieces, but it's not really there. So it looks like they're shifting to a game plan of, you know, let's try to keep it close. Let's try to shorten these games. Let's try to play tough on the defensive end. And then let's try to steal it at the end. And it's gotten them to overtime, you know, against, you know, three teams. And, you know, they've had a chance to get three good wins, and they've lost all of them in overtime. So that's, they have been unlucky in that sense. But are they as bad as 3-6? You hope that they could probably steal one of those games. 4-5. 3-6, is there really any difference between that? Not that much. You know, it's not a team that's going to win the Mountain West. It's not a team that's going to go to the NCAA tournament. But, you know, they're playing hard for the most part. They just go through stretches where they don't score for 8 minutes. And then in college basketball, it's going to hurt you because that's a really, really long time to go without scoring. They pretty much do that every game. So, yeah, that's the big issue right now.
Yeah, I mean, again, I'm coming at this pretty dry. I haven't seen a whole lot of them. I think it makes sense on the surface, though, especially the way you describe it, that they're going to the style where they, cut down on the possessions big time, try to increase the variance in the games. I think that, you know, even if they were up and down and, you know, running exactly what TJ Otzelberger's preferred vision is this year, I mean, they still were going to lose a lot of games. I still don't think you were really going to stimulate fan interest. I think in the long run, this is going to help them during Mountain West play. I think they probably will steal a game or two. And I think they have been a little bit unlucky to go 3-6. So I don't have any problem with this. I don't think that it's making a huge difference. I think this was, I mean, we said it from the beginning, this was kind of a year to get everything in place. So I don't really have any great qualms with what I've seen so far, at least.
Yeah. The biggest thing, I guess, is that they're playing hard, and you are seeing Amori Hardy take a leap forward he's a really good player. If he's back next year, then it's full speed ahead with Hardy and some of the transfers that become eligible, and, you know, some of the guys that still might be brought in next offseason as you know, grad transfers or what have you. They could be really set to do some damage next year. That's sort of the target year. You thought maybe just with style they might be able to put a decent team on the floor this year. I still think they're probably about 500 when the season ends. I think in my preseason prediction, I had them one game under 500 or somewhere around there. So yeah, it sucks, but that's what you've got for UNLV basketball right now. It's sort of a bridge season. You got to get through 20 more games, and then you get David Jenkins, then you get Moses Wood, then you get some of these other guys eligible, and then you really get a chance to see what you have. Because whatever TJ Otzelberger brings to the table as a coach, you really don't have the personnel to run it right now. So that's kind of, you've got to spend the next 20 games teaching them fundamentals and sort of getting it the groundwork set for next year.
Well, a 500 record, if they can stay at that, or one game below 500, that would right now mean a winning record in Mountain West play, which is getting underway a couple days from now, I guess, going to Fresno State. I guess, is that still in line with where you see them? Still, despite the early struggles or however you want to characterize it, a middle-of-the-road Mountain West team going to kind of be you know, splitting the difference between the haves and the have-nots in the conference?
Yeah, right. Like, they were picked 7th, I think, in the preseason poll. That's where I'd probably have them, based on, like, the eye test, right? Like, right in the middle. They can beat the teams below them. you maybe hope they can steal a game or two from the teams that are above them, but it's like they're not on San Diego State's level. They're not on Utah State's level. Those games are probably not winnable. You hope maybe they can steal one from someone else that's, you know, above them. I don't know, like 8-10 in the Mountain West. Fans are going to be disappointed because it seems like they're 8-10 in the Mountain West every year, but that's probably what you're looking at. And, you know, I don't know what else you can say about it. They've got Fresno State this coming up on Wednesday. That's a Mountain West game, and then they go back to non-conference for a few games, and then the Mountain West kicks in after the new year. It would be nice to pick up a win against Fresno State and sort of get that early win just banked and waiting for you when conference play starts for real. And that's a team that – one of those teams I mentioned that is probably better than you, but you might be able to go up there and steal one. So we'll see if they can keep it close and if Amori Hardy can come through at the end or someone can hit a big shot down the stretch to finally give them that win in a close game that they're really searching for.
Yeah, what's with this one stray Mountain West game? I mean,
well, it's two for everyone else.
Okay,
this is one of UNLV's buys. You know, you play once Mountain West starts, you play like basically every Wednesday and every Saturday, and then you have two buys where you skip a Saturday or you skip a Wednesday where you don't have a game. So for some reason, UNLV, this is one of their buys is used up on this early outlier game, which is taking a weird situation and making it even weirder when you've only got one game. Non-conference. So yeah, they play this one, then they go to BYU, and then I think they've got a couple more games after that, or maybe one more game after that, and then, you know, then Mountain West really starts.
Right, yeah, so this week on the docket at Fresno State, as we mentioned, on Wednesday, BYU and Salt Lake City, it looks like, Saturday. BYU, I mean, but both these teams look like, they're going to be underdogs, likely losses, but both where maybe they have a chance at an upset. BYU kind of looks similar to UNLV, at least just from a strictly a number standpoint. A team I usually think of as like fast, getting a lot of shots up, but have really slowed down this year. Might be playing more at UNLV's pace. Anything else stand out about that game?
No, I mean, if you think back to last year, that's kind of that was the game UNLV won at the buzzer in overtime on a three-pointer as time expired. That's sort of what you're playing for this year when you're trying to steal one of these games. You want to, you know, 68, 65, something like that. And then you get the ball at the end and you try and make a couple plays on your last two or three possessions to win the game. I don't know much about BYU yet. I haven't started looking at them in advance of that game. You're saying they're slower this year? They're not like...
Yeah, I was just stunned. I saw on KenPom they're like 215 in tempo. I usually think they're like top 30, aren't they? Yeah. So at least that's my perception.
Same thing for UNLV, which is Otzelberger has always been, you know, top 50 in tempo, sometimes even higher. And then this year they're, you know, 320 or 330 in tempo before the last game. So it's like, yeah, it's hard to play that slow unless you're intentionally doing it. So yeah, that's weird to see both of these teams sort of getting into that half-court deliberate style of basketball.
Yeah, maybe it will play into UNLV's hands.
Do you think the fans, like, after an off-season of hearing about, you know, Otzelberger and the offense and how it was going to be fast and analytics and three-pointers, do you think it hurts in the big picture that after eight games they're back to being, like, intentionally half-court, walking it up, we need to slow it down, like now they're intentionally playing slow? Or do you think like the fans just sort of write it off, you know, are they smart enough to realize like this is what we have to do this year and then we'll really get to it next year?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's just such a pessimism around UNLV right now, I guess. Yeah. All through athletics, that they're probably more on the former, that, you know, they're a little frustrated. I know attendance hasn't been the best lately. I know the last two home games were Jackson State and SMU, so not exactly a big names to draw people out. But I think probably right now people are, feeling a little – I don't know the right word for it. I think they're probably making fun of it, ridiculing it a little bit. But I think that it goes back to the – God, I hate cliches, but it kind of goes back to the whole winning solves everything. I think if they upset a team or two – in the Mountain West, I mean, maybe even Fresno State on Saturday, and then we're a ways away. It's not till 2020 when they start again, but looks like they have Utah State and Boise in two of the first three. Like, let's just say they win one of those. I just feel like if they win some close games, even with the tempo past 300, I think people will start climbing right back on.
Yeah, I mean, if, in a perfect world, you know, Las Vegas fans, they always want to go back to that old school, run it up and down the floor, score in the hundreds. They always want that. But they'll take winning, like we saw that with Kruger. Like, they have whatever it takes to win. If you put a good team on the floor, they'll support it. So it's just, yeah, it's just Otzelberger came in with such a reputation as a rising star, and the guy who played is very much married to that offensive concept of open court transition and all that stuff, to have to sort of wait a year on it is probably a little disappointing to the fans, but I, you know, maybe they'll, you hope that the reward comes next year when they have a better roster.
Yeah. I mean, be cynical if you want, but win or lose, however TJ Otzelberger's tenure winds up here, you're going to get that style eventually. I mean, there's no question. That's what we've said it over and over. He's using this season as a way to kind of build into that. So that brand of UNLV basketball, more or less, is going to be back.
Well, the way you know that he's intent, that there is a plan for sweeping changes and for implementing this system next year, is they've recruited already like 6 high school players in the class of 2020. There are only 3 seniors set to graduate from this current team, so like, you know that some players are getting swept out, some players are going to get run off. Like, there's big changes coming, and you know, Otzelberger would never say this. No coach would ever say this, but they're kind of probably using the last 2/3 of this season as basically an audition for the guys they want to keep long term, and the guys who they think can fit into it long term and help them win. And the guys that can't are probably going to be, you know, asked to leave the program to make room for the new recruits coming in.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's kind of is even a season long audition at this point. I'm sure they would have liked to have stole some of these games, but you know, you can only, you know, get so much in practice. You kind of have to see how these guys respond in game situations, which I guess maybe I should ask you about, as we haven't talked about a whole lot of players. I mean, we mentioned that Hardy's had a very good year. We both expected that. He's been the leader of the team, I mean, easily. But who else? Who are some of the guys you think that they've seen some good early returns from that maybe you're excited to build around, and or if there's any the other way where a guy's fallen a little bit short of expectations?
The two guys that are obviously standing out as having good years and can play for this team and will be welcome back for sure, and two guys you can build around, are Amori Hardy and Mbaké Zhang. They've had really strong starts to the season. Hardy, obviously, he's scoring a lot. He's shooting the ball pretty well. Against Cincinnati, he had the worst game of his career. So, I mean, it's probably the wrong time to be lavishing him with praise. I think he shot 4 of 20 overall, like 4 of 17 from 3. It was a really bad game for him. But he's still the leader. He's still a guy that can score for you. He's obviously got a place on the team. And Zhang is just, he's playing great on defense. He's got to get better at, you know, finishing off lobs and things like that. But he had a strong start last year and then sort of tailed off as the season went along. We'll see if he can keep it up this year. But those are your two guys. Those are the two guys you want to keep and build around for next season. And for someone who hasn't really stepped up and shown that, I would say Donnie Tillman, who's a guy who was probably the most heralded person they brought in the offseason among the guys who are playing this year. And he just hasn't shown that much on the court yet. He's not hitting three-pointers at a high rate. He's not shooting much at a high rate. He just sort of drifts in and out of the offense. He's not really that assertive. I don't think he's found a way to get comfortable and to get his shots. I don't think the staff has figured out quite how to use him yet. So you're sort of waiting for him to break out. But until then, it's sort of been underwhelming to see the Pac-12 sixth man of the year as a sophomore last year come into UNLV as a junior and not really have an impact. So he's probably the one guy you're still waiting on to what do we actually have in him.
In my de facto favorite player, because the last time we podcast together, you sold me on him. He's been injured, Jonah Antonio, right? I mean, yep. Do you think, how big of a difference has that made? Does one of these close games swing the other way if you have your best shooter on the floor, maybe, you know, knocking down a couple more threes throughout the game?
Maybe. It definitely helps your spacing. I know we've seen Otzelberger use him situationally because he's not a good defender. We've seen him off the floor at some end of game situations because they don't want him to have to defend anyone. But yeah, he definitely makes a difference with your spacing because there's no one else on the floor on these driving kicks and guys who he knows how to relocate to open spots on the floor to get open, which not a lot of these guys are really doing that. You're seeing them standing still. Like when Amori Hardy drives, the fans like to say, oh, it's just 4 guys standing around watching you. But you're not supposed to be standing around when he's driving, you know, because your defender is turning his head. The defense is reacting. You're supposed to be sliding over, you know, 6 to 8 feet to the left or to the right or finding an open spot. And Antonio is really the only guy, I think, who knows how to play off the ball like that and can get to the open spaces and relocate and get open shots. So not having him out there is definitely hurting the spacing. So I don't think he's going to be back anytime soon, probably a couple weeks after that long break maybe. We'll see him again, but hopefully his shooting will open up the offense a little bit.
Yeah, maybe you would hope for early in Mountain West Conference play, because I don't know. You just look at the roster, and it seems like that's kind of a big – missing link right now. They could really use that, at least from the outside looking in.
One of the reasons is because of Tillman. Like, we expected Tillman to be a good three-point shooter and a guy who took a high volume and made a good percentage, but he hasn't done either. He's not shooting a lot, and he's not shooting at a high percentage. So, yeah, if Antonio can come back and help pick up some of that slack, it would definitely help.
Yeah, so that's something to look out for from UNLV. I guess signing off, we kind of talked about both these games, Fresno State at BYU. What's your feel? I mean, what percent do you give them to, you know, pull an upset in either of these games? I think if you go 1-1 this week, it would be a huge win. I think you'd be excited if you could just steal one of them.
You'd go happy 1-1 just because if you don't win one, you're just going a long time in between wins. You know what I mean? Like, they beat Jackson State. That feels like it was 3 weeks ago. What was it, like 8 days ago or something, or last Wednesday?
Yeah, it does feel like a long time ago.
So it's like, if you don't do that and then you lose at Fresno State, then you're losing at BYU, then you've got a home you're just going a week and a half or 2 weeks between wins, and that's just a long time for a team that needs to learn how to win. So if you can get one, you're happy on this trip.
Yeah, Fresno State not exactly coming in on a tear. They played some tough opponents, but they've lost back-to-back games to St. Mary's and Cal State Northridge. You've already said they're probably the more talented team, but I don't think this is a game where UNLV's totally outmatched. I think they're going to have a chance up in Fresno.
Yeah, I think so too. That's probably the best chance of the two. I don't expect much of a crowd for that game in Fresno. And the issue for UNLV and Fresno State in recent years, it seems like, is just Fresno State has always been tougher. Like, they've just always out-physicaled UNLV, pushed them around under the basket, pushed them around on the perimeter. And last year, they just had more three-point shooting than UNLV. How much of that has changed with the rosters, with, you know, the Fresno roster, with the UNLV roster? Can they match up physically? Can they play hard enough? It's one of those games where UNLV, if they only play seven guys, are they going to get worn out in the final minutes and then be too tired to finish the game off? That's probably the big question for me. Can you get 40 strong minutes from UNLV's seven or eight rotation players?
Yeah, absolutely. And it seems like this is my making me feel old moment of the podcast. I can't believe, I guess, Nate Grimes is a senior now for Fresno State, one of their key cogs going into the year, but a local kid. Someone that UNLV will need to slow down, I guess, in Fresno.
Yeah, it's Grimes is the guy, and he revels in it. Like, you get the feeling that he enjoys beating UNLV or enjoys playing well against them. So, big game for John. Can you control the defensive boards? You know, Fresno is going to attack the offensive glass. Can John do that on his own? Is he going to need some help? Because UNLV doesn't really have a true power forward to help him down there. Can they take care of the defensive rebounds? Something they did pretty well against Cincinnati. I thought they held their own very well on the defensive glass. Can they do it two games in a row? That'll be something to watch.
Absolutely. So, not looking great right now for UNLV, but a long way to go in what's kind of a transitional year.
Oh, that's a tough way to sell it. They're not doing well, but there's a long, you got a long orbit to watch.
I'm kind of grasping here, but
you're going to be watching it for a long time, so settle in at least.
Not incorrect, though. I mean,
yeah, no, you're right. It's just for the fans to hear that it's got to be year after year after year. You're not good, but you get 20 more games of it, so suck it up.
I guess I should have come back to our guy, Jonah Antonio. We'll be returning at some point, hopefully for the, start of the restart of the Mountain West, and maybe that can open up the spacing, like you said.
Yeah, maybe that can give them a little bit of a different look on offense. There's a little optimism.
All right, really dire Rebel rooms these days with UNLV football. Again, not going to a bowl game. UNLV basketball struggling. But we're here for the long run throughout. We'll try to come to you several times throughout the basketball season. For Mike, I'm Case. Thanks for listening to the Rebel Room.